Well, hello and welcome back to your hour, the monthly, the live show, the Q&A with the one and the only Dr. Haim, all the way from the land down under, somewhere in there. I mean, you know, he's moving quite a bit, but you know, this is the moment where we get to ask some live questions and get real live answers for our mental health. And this is Mental Health Hour, really. We're one of the best in the world. And well, doctor, welcome to the show as always.
Thank you very much, Hurricane. As always, it's great to be here, coming in from the other side of the world, but the globe is getting smaller.
You mean the future, right?
So we're in the future. So we talk about the time difference, but it's also the space difference. We are thousands of miles apart, but we're not, are we, Hurricane? We're in the same studio at the same time, talking about the same issues, trying to get through this thing called life together.
Well, it is amazing that technology brings us, you know, about and close by, no matter where we are. I mean, you know, back in the days, long time ago, they thought that this thing was not moving, and we all move at the same speed. I mean, this is a big vessel that's going and throughout the galaxy, so we are at full speed, and we're still connected. And yes, you are in the future. You're definitely in a different season, but you know, we are in the same, you know, vision and mission here, and it's really to help people around the world, you know, kind of get some access to how they can do better with their mental health. And so we do have a bunch of questions today, as always, to ask you, Doc, and let's go through them and see how well we can, you know, maybe satisfy some of these questions and then maybe get to our audiences as well. Now, we are live on YouTube and Instagram, so please do follow and, you know, catch up with us. You can put some comments in there as well if you wanted. And if you wanted to actually engage with us, you have, you know, on the ticker, you have the actual I don't know how you're going to do it. It's very difficult to copy it, but maybe you can and put it there. Maybe I'll put it on the comments here on the Instagram and see if it works. But again, you can engage with us as well. So, doctor, we're going to go with the first question. These questions are long, so I'm just going to try to figure out where I can get them started. All right, here we go. Okay. Sorry about that. Trash posted it when I put it on the comment, but you know, here we go. Dr. Haim, why people always justify things without thinking? I hear I'm just doing my job, a security staff, for example, collection agency reps, military officers, even when it does not make sense and can hurt people. Is it pure obedience, ignorance, or simply fear of losing income? Jasmine, Connecticut. That's a pretty interesting question.
Jasmine in Connecticut. Wow, what a question. So this sort of goes to the heart of our behavior. It's very interesting. So there was a experiment that was done in the 70s where people were told to be either prisoners or to be wardens. And basically, we all found out that through that experiment, we take on the role far too well. Now, Hurricane, I've got to say this was a controversial experiment. I believe it was called the Sanford Prison Experiment. And a lot of people were hurt to sort of think that they would actually hurt other people, which says something else as well. Because, okay, let me go through the experiment. In the experiment, students were asked to take on the role of either a prisoner or a warden. And so the wardens acted out this role of being a warden far too well. It looked like they started to bully people. And the people who were asked to be prisoners took on the role of prisoners or being victims far too well. And the reason that I brought up the controversy straight away is because after they published these results, which looked quite devastating, people sort of went, hold on, it wasn't quite like that. So that's why I want to bring in the controversy of these experiments straight away for Jasmine in Connecticut, because we're disputing this idea that we will just take on roles. However, Jasmine's observation and Jasmine's question is, do we take on the roles? And yeah, we do. Okay. Part of my role of being a doctor is that somewhere in my mind, I put on a white coat. I don't do it literally, but when I turn up to work, I am there to help people heal. I am there to find out what their problems are, and I take on the role of somebody who can find those problems, even if sometimes I personally am not feeling like I've got those sort of capabilities. So if we extrapolate that, so let's just take a teacher. A teacher has to turn up at school every day and be the person that can lead students, guide students, and even teach students what they need to know to get through life and school that particular day. So if we take military officers, police people, part of their role is to actually have a security mindset where they're the people who are enforcing the role. So that actually means that they can do their role better if they actually play that role well. The thing is that in our society where we're afraid that people will hurt other people, sometimes playing these roles looks like you're actually using power over other people. And we live in a society which, quite wonderfully, wants to make sure that we don't hurt other people with that power. So what I'm doing for Jasmine is just refining her question a little bit. For everybody to do the job of a policeman, of somebody who's an immigration officer, for somebody who's, let's say, a principal, or somebody who is a warden who has to do their job well, our brain going into that role is actually very important. I suppose Jasmine's question is, are we capable of abusing these roles? And the unfortunate answer is, Jasmine, yeah, the science shows that we are capable of abusing these roles. But, and this is where keeping compassion and humanity and knowing that we are working with other human beings is so important, so that we don't abuse these roles, but we just play our role well. Now, I'm going to stop there, Hurricane, because that opens up a whole lot of stuff. And I do want us to get back to what Jasmine's question was. And I do want us to get back into the brain to see how this actually works. But why don't you keep me on track and
there? Well, there's something there. I mean, you know, that's a question that I also kind of sometimes, you know, like you're in a place, whatever you are, and there's someone who's got some sort of a role, as you said, you know, it could be a security guard, but they take it to the extreme. I mean, they're really, you know, it's not even a big deal sometimes, like where, you know, they're just doing a job, which I get it, but, you know, they can go beyond that. They can hurt people. They can do bad things. They can, whether, I mean, again, it's in business, in stores, maybe in restaurants. I mean, everywhere you'll find some scenario where someone is really taking it to the extent of like pushing people and getting all excited about stuff. And I'm not talking about law enforcement when you really like have that kind of level of authority. Yeah. And even that can be, you know, an extreme. We've seen some of those. But like sometimes, like, you know, someone is really just like, dude, just relax, chill. I mean, you know, it's not the end of the world here. You know, or you can just talk nice. You know, sometimes they really go to the extra measure that they don't have to. And I think everybody watching or listening has experienced some level of that, whether with themselves or they've seen it in real action. Yeah, if not, we're seeing that stuff on TikTok a lot of times these days. So it is a fact. It is happening. But I wanted to touch something quickly on that, because when you mentioned role, and this is like, so in my trainings, when we do trainings with staff, I mean, we do role play. And role play actually is exactly that. We get into the role, just like even interviews. I actually have role plays where, you know, you're the customer and I'm the customer and you're the person that's going to do work, and we test it out. And in movies, you know, we see people really get emotional and they can tear up, they can do all kinds of stuff. They get emotional because they get into that whole character and they become whatever that is. And you're right, that experiment that you mentioned, there was a movie about it where those people kind of went the both sides of the extreme. I mean, the inmates became real bad and the other ones became really like, you know what, we own this place. And it turned out to be a disaster. So we do have that, whether we have leaders, we have, you know, people here and there that happen, and we have common people. Sometimes you give someone just a title and they get, you know, and I think we've covered this a couple of times before, where they have the power of, you know, like, you know, power trips, right? And that's it. It's like the end of the world. But I think what I see in the question more is the idea of like, I'm just doing my job. That doesn't justify things. You know what I mean? That, just stating that I'm just doing the job, what does that mean? I mean, really, you know, everybody can say, I'm just doing my job. You know, But you can follow, right. You can follow stuff just because we're not robots. You know what I mean? Yeah. Even AI is better than that.
That's right. That's right. So thank you for that, Hurricane, because that's what Jasmine's question actually is. Why do people justify that? And we used to think that we were rational human beings, that we thought about the right thing to do and we would come up with the right answer and we would just do that. And since the 1990s, and this information and evidence comes from a genius of a neuroscientist by the name of Antonio Damasio, and he wrote a book in 1994 called Descartes' Error. And René Descartes was a person who said, I think, therefore I am. And Damasio said, you know what, René Descartes was wrong. The actual thing that we should say is, I think and I feel, therefore I am. And the point of it is that our feelings are just as strong, if not stronger, than our thoughts. So when we're given the role that, let's say, is in security or law enforcement, and then we go on what we call as a power trip, and a power trip is a feeling. And those feelings, in, if you like, sort of trump our thoughts, so that we go on this power trip and we go with our feelings. And then the justification comes when we go, okay, I didn't mean to do that. I'm just doing my job. So let's go into the brain about justification, all right? Because justification means that we've done something wrong, but we don't want to be held responsible to it, so we justify it. So, hey, this is not my fault. So one of the key things about the brain, and this is a big oversimplification, I know, but it helps us understand, is exactly what Antonio Damasio was talking about is present in the brain. When we make decisions, we make decisions in what's called the orbitofrontal cortex. So that is actually right in the front part of our brain. And what this part of the brain does is it asks your frontal lobe about your beliefs, about your values, about all the things that you know, all the things that are in your memory, and says, what are the thoughts, if you like, about this matter? But it also asks your limbic system, and the limbic system is a place where, generally speaking, your emotions have their seat, and it asks, how do you feel about this? What does that feeling of power feel like? When are you fearful? When are you angry? And those feelings have as strong an input into your decision-making as your thoughts, which is why we as human beings can decide and come up with the wrong answer. And when we're on a power trip, if you like, we are listening more to the feeling side of our brain, to the limbic system that says, hey, this power trip, this feels good. This feels good. But if somebody calls us to account and says, okay, why did you do that? Or why are you going too far here? And we're asked a question like that, that appeals to the thinking part of our brain. And it goes, oh, I don't want to be a bad person. Actually, I'm not a bad person. I was just doing my job. Because this is what I'm supposed to do. So it goes to your thoughts and your beliefs to come up with a justification to keep your brain intact. Because we all want to be accepted by each other. We all want to be known as gentle human beings, basically. And the truth is, that's actually what we are. But in moments where we're in situations where our emotions take over, we can forget about what we actually believe and what we believe is the right thing to do and go with our feelings. And as you said, Hurricane, that can include power trips.
Well, doctor, I mean, again, we are human beings that can think and really have the ability to select, right? You know, certain actions and behaviors and stuff like that, right? But I mean, what about empathy? I mean, sometimes, you know, people do things, and again, in the name of whatever duty that they're doing, without having any empathy, like, and they almost stay cold-hearted. I mean, you know, even though, like, you'll see people beating on people, right? You know, riot police, for example. And by the way, I mean, sometimes it's necessary, but I mean, I to be honest with you, I don't see why you have to go to that extreme personally, because you have some less lethal, you know, things that you can use, you know, instead of really breaking bones and things like that. I mean, that, you know, but that's an example that, you know, you see it like that's really bad, right? But then you have like, you know, even you see, some, you need to have compassion sometimes, you know, you don't know what people are going, especially if you're a service, whatever, you know, you might want to like think twice, well, maybe I can help this person and let's, I just ask one question, see why not, as opposed to like, you know, I'm just not going to do this, you know, get out of my face, whatever. And then it gets crazy, right? So where's the empathy? I mean, it, we're supposed to have that balance, you know, all the time.
We do. Okay. So Hurricane, thanks for bringing up empathy, because I'm going to take us to one of our favorite parts of the brain, but I'm going to start off with an extreme example. And I'm going to use the extreme example that's away from us so that we can see that we're all capable of losing empathy, if you like. And yeah, we look in our society and we see police people beating up the wrong people, and we say that's bad. But let's face it, you know, if you've ever been angry with somebody that you love, you're beating somebody up just a little bit, all right? And it's not as bad. But we're going to look at an extreme example. So in World War II, in Nazi Germany, there were members of the SS that would torture and kill Jewish people in concentration camps and not think twice about it. And then they would go home and have a meal with their families and their children, and they would read them bedtime stories. Now, that sounds bizarre to us because we couldn't imagine that we're capable of doing something like this. And here's the really sad part. We're actually capable of things like that. And what has to happen is you have to take your empathy and withdraw it from other human beings. So in other words, you have to dehumanize somebody else. You have to see other people as less than human. Whereas all of our families, Hurricane, we see them as human beings. And so our empathy centers are open. This is why I'm going into the brain, to my favorite part. There are huge There are huge chunks of the human brain devoted to empathy. There's the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is right in the center of the brain, which is involved in all of our decision-making along with the orbitofrontal cortex. And in a way, it is devoted to other people. We also have the insular cortex that's devoted to other people. And we have a whole chunk of the brain that's devoted to seeing and hearing how we come across to other people. So our brains have evolved to be in tune with other people. And this is actually empathy. But when it gets to a war situation, we end up shutting down that empathy because there's something that is impinging on all of society to justify everything. And war is never good. It's a bad situation to begin with. And so when we look at the actions of people in war, we can't ask how can they do something that bad when the whole situation is bad, which takes us to that experiment because it was a setup. And when we're in a setup, we can lose some of our humanity. So in society, when we play roles, we have to see that our jobs is something of a setup and we become a little less human. And that's why we have to keep having this reminder that we are social beings. We have empathy, that there are large chunks of our brain that's devoted to getting on with each other. And something has to go wrong with our relationships with each other for that empathy to be squashed down to do ridiculous things to each other.
Well, thank you, Doug. But here's the thing, right? Here's the fun thing that I cannot, you know, like my mind is just flipping on me. Well, we wouldn't want that to happen to us, right? I mean,
that's right.
No, I mean, that's the part that kind of intrigues me. Like, that's we can do things to other people, but if someone that is stronger, bigger, whatever comes to us, we won't accept that. This is the part that is like contradiction. I mean, it's talking about controversial. I mean, you know, you can do this, but then the minute you get someone that's bigger, bully than you, you know, what happens, right? Since, you know, like don't do unto others, you know, do unto others if you want to be done unto you, or whatever the expression. Well, I mean, where that goes, I mean, that's actually, you know, something that we all know. I think everybody's expecting some, you know, level of respect from everyone, but then we can disrespect others in the name of whatever it is. And I think that's really this whole dilemma of like,
yes,
I'm just doing my job. I mean, I'm the boss.
That's right. And this is what comes down to Jasmine's question about justification. And it comes down to those words that you just used then, in the name of whatever. So now we're going to get right down to the basics of what empathy is, right? And part of the things about what empathy is, because we believe that it is hardwired into us. When we see another person in pain, it actually fills us with fear because we don't want to be in pain. It'd be awful if we were in that painful situation. And that's why if you drive past a car accident, you go silent a little bit, because it's like, there, but for the grace of random chance, go I. Okay, I don't want this to happen to me. So all respect to somebody else, and let's try to help each other out. That's what's natural. And those words that you said, in the name of something else, means that there's got to be something else that comes in to block off that natural empathy, because empathy is, my gosh, you're in pain. I wouldn't want that for me. So I don't want it for you. That's what empathy is. Your pain inflicting on me. And there are studies that have gone on since 1991 to show that our brain fires in pain if we see somebody else's pain. So in other words, we feel somebody else's pain. But why did that SS officer not feel the pain of the Jewish people? Why do these things go on? Because we play games. Because in the name of something else, we stop that empathy. And it just happens. And this is your area, Hurricane. In business, we stop seeing that we are dealing with human beings and we start to see it as a game. And so we want to play the game to win. And it gets to a bad point when we can see that we're treating somebody as less than human and to get something out of them. If you're playing tennis and the rules of the game is may the best person win, then that's fine because that's what you sign up for. But you know, in business, people can start bullying because the game becomes more important than the person. So we need to get back to that stage where the person is always more important than the game, whatever the game is that we're playing. If it's in a war, if it's in security or in some of these high-profile jobs, or if it's in business, or if it's even within your family, the person needs to be more important than whatever game or role we're playing.
Well, thank you. You know, it's amazing because, I mean, we're just such a complex, you know, species, not even funny. You know, I mean, you know, empathy, I mean, we talk about being humane to animals and, you know, stuff, but sometimes we can't even, you know, do that ourselves. But what about the idea? There's two things I want to just throw in there. I mean, it's a pretty interesting question. One is the idea of, what about when people, like you mentioned the SS, right? I mean, you know, what says that these guys were not almost brainwashed to become just robots, just to go and kill and do this? Like, there's nothing. These are bad people. We just got to eliminate them, right? And that's the part. That's one thing that I can never expect, you know, or accept, no matter what. I don't care who you are, what nationality, what religion stuff. I mean, you know, I mean, we hear this by extremists in all religions, right? And people killing in the name of religion or whatever. To me, that is not supposed to happen. And that's not how, you know, and what religion is about or any other stuff. But people sometimes get programmed. We hear that in extreme cases where the people get really, I forgot the word, you know, the word here, but they get really like, you know, program into doing these devious bad things.
Yes.
And then you have also, like, you know, I can go to the other extent, like, you know, for the people that believe in religion and maybe spiritual world, maybe the, you know, the devil is real and there is a power that is beyond us that kind of take over, and we hear the word possession, you know, someone is possessed, and you almost see that when someone is going crazy or beating on something, they're not really themselves. I mean, you cannot possibly comprehend, like, sometimes you watch these documentaries about killers and, you know, extreme cases of these bad folks, right? But when you see them, I mean, and look in their eyes, it's like they're not there. I mean, they're just hollow and there's something else in there. So how do you, in your world, this kind of interesting world that you live in.
It's a very interesting world. And to answer that question, Hurricane, I'm going to talk about how we're in a sense all a little bit brainwashed, but I'm going to leave the devil and the possession just just at the moment, okay? Sure. Because when we think about the word brainwashed, we think about big government agencies putting people under lights and getting them to think in a certain way. And those things do happen. But if we look more on a day-to-day basis, the brain is absorbing information and experiences and influences all the time. And these same parts of the brain that keep us in empathy with other people around us means that we're actually able to be influenced by all the things around us. So in other words, our brains are shaped by our culture and by our day-to-day experience, okay? So in a sense, we're all being brainwashed. And this is why you know that I play a little vendetta against social media, because if you are watching things for 8 hours a day, your brain is absorbing all of that material through exactly the same mechanisms, through the mirror neurons, through the angular cingulate gyrus, through your limbic system and into your frontal lobe to influence your beliefs and to influence the way that you see other people and to influence your amount of empathy, so that any information that your brain takes in a small sense, and I mean in a small sense, brainwashing you. So in that, we need to make sure collectively as a society that the information that goes into each other's brains is actually helpful, because it is in all this information that we either humanize each other or dehumanize each other. And studies actually show that it's difficult to get somebody to point a gun at another person that could end their lives. And in a war situation, this is what you've got to get people to do. And remember when you said, but in the name of something else, I'll do this. That's the something else. War becomes a something else. Business becomes a something else. The bottom line becomes something else. Just doing my job is the something else that becomes a justification for our brain to see each other as less than human. And that's a terrible place to be, Hurricane.
I mean, it is. And it's
scary stuff.
It is scary. I mean, you know, like I try to listen. I mean, I think we're all under some sort of level of hypnosis, as you said. I mean, we are influenced day in, and maybe that's what it is. I mean, I know you understand hypnosis as well. And because we kind of like, you know, we get robotic and we just, someone tells you what to do, you're going to do it. But see, that's the thing. Like, I'm not a, what do you call it, a rebel of any sort, but I do question things. I think, do we even question things, you know, or orders when someone tells you, like, you know, like, for example, we talk business simple, right? You know, sometimes you have to terminate an employment. But, you know, there are people that do it with no emotions. There are people that do it with emotion. Right. There are people that do it with due process, because I know that that's going to affect somebody. I mean, I've done that, but only in extreme cases when I had no choice. I mean, obviously, when you work for a company, there is that thing that is, you have orders and you have, you know, bottom line, whatever, and you have to keep, you know, the ship, you know, running. But at the same time, you know, you got to do it. If you can help people somehow, you do it. So you do that until there is no way out. I mean, that's the only solution that's possible. You go to that extreme. But you know, do we have the, I mean, I think we do. I mean, I try to do it. And again, maybe I'm not the best person, you know, on this planet, but I try to do it the best that I can to keep the positive, you know, not to do the negative and just to see a positive outlook on things. You know, is there a way that, I mean, an exercise maybe that we all can do as humans to kind of practice, just think about things before you make decisions, even if you're under strict orders? You know, we've seen this even, I mean, I would give example of movies where people have gone against orders not to do things that didn't make sense, you know, and sometimes even they get court-martialed, right, for not taking an action, right? I mean, that just, you know, example, some they deal with, nobody knows, but some they get caught. But the fact is, you know, we do have the capability to control, you know, how we do it regardless, you know, and sometimes it's just like, you got to stop, you know, you got to know when to stop. But again, I guess that's an individual thing. And that's why I went to that extreme of obsession, or like being possession rather. You know, I mean, you have to be taken by some other energy not to be you.
Yeah. So you brought up another example where the justification comes from something outside of you. In the business world, we want to take care of each other as people until it comes down to this. And the business world will often talk about the bottom line. You've got to take care of the bottom line. And people will say, okay, the bottom line is this. And that means that I have to terminate this person's employment. And to do that, you've got to be tougher. You've got to put your empathy away. And I will end up with an exercise that we can all do to keep that empathy, to keep that feeling that we are fellow human beings. And so recently I was the clinical director in a psychiatric unit that was in prisons. And in that situation, there are people who have psychiatric problems, but they have also committed crimes, which means that they have to stay in a prison. And in that situation, you've got the prisoner versus the warden situation, but you've also got the caring of a psychiatrist. And what happens is you build personal relationship with each person, because doesn't matter what somebody's done or what they're going through, they are still a human being and they still want connection with other people. And so you end up building relationship with people who on paper have done horrible things. But the person in front of you is a person wanting connection. And so the exercise is simply to have some time with somebody and you sit down and you look them in the eyes. And you look somebody in the eyes for a long time. 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, and you make a connection. And so we have a lot of published studies on what's called the eye contact effect, the eye contact effect, because through the eyes in particular, our brains connect through a mechanism which we call mirror neurons. So in other words, if I look you in the eye, Hurricane, and you're feeling fearful, then my brain is going to fire in its fear center to say, oh, I'm picking up on some fear here. But here's the interesting thing. During that eye contact, we are connected as human beings. And just for a while, I feel what you're feeling and you feel what I'm feeling. And so this is what we call, you know, sort of catching the vibe, reading the room, making a connection, being on the same page as somebody else. It just takes a little bit of eye contact, and that person becomes human to you. To not be human means you've got to cut that off. But to keep the human contact, make eye contact, the eye contact effect.
You know, I love it. Well, first of all, I'm in sales, so we do have that. And even in this world of media, it's always eye contact, right? I mean, you got to, you know, and there is that thing that when people don't look directly into your eyes, they're not really true. I mean, there's something they're hiding. They cannot, you know, because people are always afraid that people can read them for what they are. And by the way, that's also something that I've learned in martial arts a long time ago. If you, and by the way, people can test this out. I mean, if you can look at someone close by eye to eye, they move, you move. You can see their movement before it happens. Literally, you will actually perceive, anticipate movement by being literally focused on that. Very seldom you'll find someone that makes a move and you can't catch that move if you're really focused on that. So you're right. You know, it's like soul to soul as opposed to just body to body. I mean, there's deeper there. And I was laughing. The reason I was smiling, there's a commercial that is actually going on these days on TV. It is the Geico is our insurance, one of the insurance companies here. They have a gecko as a character. And the one that's going on right now is like, hey, we got a moment, you know, eye contact. So when you said that, I was looking at, you know, that came to my mind. And that shows the power of like marketing and things like that. It sticks to your mind. But really, it's really eye contact. It's something that we use in sales. You want to make sure that you connect with people and make them feel good about themselves. And you said, I mean, it's difficult to do it on a screen, but when you meet with people in person, that makes a big difference. But you're right, doctor. I mean, it's the idea of having connection, you know, with folks and really feeling them. And it doesn't, that's the other thing. Like, again, quickly, and we're going to close this, you know, in the business world, I've had this where it's just another month. You give someone another chance. You know, like some people tell me, like, I'm like crazy because I give people second chances, third chances. And so what? Sometimes people need a second and third chance, you know, and, you know, people don't get that. Like, life is going to go quick. Listen, I'm in the 50s. I just blinked and it's, I'm here. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, before you know it, you're not here. So the bottom line is, you know, what's wrong with us? I mean, we can do better and we can see the value of others and maybe we can help people. Not everything is for everyone, one, and people can change. And so that's kind of like my little, you know, advice, you know, just give people a little bit more, you know, see what you can do with them, help them out somehow. And before you make, you know, those extreme judgment, and you don't have to go to the extreme unless it's necessary, right? I mean, even in martial arts, we have that. You don't really, you know, beat someone if you don't have to, especially if you're trained to do that.
yeah. And Hurricane, what you said is just so good. And I'm going to sort of pick up on your example in business where you give somebody a second or a third chance. And actually what you're talking about is forgiveness. Mm. Somebody screws up, you look them in the eye and you say, can I give you another chance? Or they ask you for another chance. And the question is, can I trust you if I give you another chance? And it's that look in the eye that goes, yeah, I'll try to do better, right? And this is one thing that the eye contact effect is actually really important for. And we talk about business and martial arts and it works there. But in families, to sit down with somebody that you just had an argument with, to look them in the eye and to say, I'm sorry, I need another chance. Can you forgive me? When those sort of words are said with eye contact, man, it's just so powerful because you're connecting as human beings. And what happens, that two brains connect through their anterior cingulate gyrus and through the mirror neurons that's happening through the eyes. And you go, yeah, okay, it's okay. And through the humanity, you move forward together with another chance. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling for everybody to have trust and use the eye contact effect for forgiveness.
You know, doctor, I'm trying to read your eyes right now. I'm just kidding. it is hard to do it on screen. But, you know, but I really, you know, it's again, you know, hopefully folks, you know, watching, I mean, it's a deep question. It's got a lot of angles. But at the end of the day, I mean, in the name of something, that's okay. But we have a little bit more than just that. We can do more and we can do better. And by the way, there are examples, and I've seen those examples where someone that had the authority, that had the power, and you chose a different approach and got better results as opposed to choosing the extreme. Because everybody can go to the extreme and, you know, that's like, you know you're going to do it. It's going to have some results, but you might get better results. And that's what we say even in the world of business. You don't want to be, you know, as a leader, you don't want to be feared. You want to be respected, right? And you don't get the respect without, you know, with like bossing around and just, you know, I'm going to write you up, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And you get it by working with people and helping them and teaching them and training them. Give them all the chances and the opportunities. Of course, there's a limit to everything in life. I mean, you can't just keep going and, you know, and people sometimes this is not for you, whatever the case may be. But we have to do it. Even society, it doesn't matter where you are. As you said, family, I know you deal with relationships and you know, and couples. And this is a big deal in the couple world and relationships. And as you said, I'm sorry, ego got to go.
Ego got to go. That's really good. So as a business leader, you can use the eye contact effect to instill fear in somebody, or you can use the eye contact effect to draw out some respect from them, and the results can be very different.
Well, I think we beat this one for a bit, but I think
thank
we covered
you,
a lot.
From Connecticut, yes.
All right, so the next one will be a little light, I think. Well, I don't know. Let's see. So, Dr. Ham, I've been feeling empty even when life is going well. What does that mean? And is this or is that depression?
Okay, so who's this one from, Hurricane?
I am not sure, actually, because no, I don't have any.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so this feeling of feeling empty even when life is going well, is it depression? So, first thing, I've got to let people know that when a psychiatrist diagnoses somebody and gives a label such as depression, it takes hours to get to know somebody and to have a thorough history. So on the basis of one question, please don't take this as a diagnosis, because feeling empty can mean a lot of different things. It could mean depression, but not necessarily, because what I want to get to go, where I want to go in this is that feeling of emptiness being part of a society that is losing its sense of meaning. So I'm going to go to a value studies, because in the University of California in Los Angeles, they've been doing a survey of their first year students for decades now. And whereas in the late 70s, a meaningful life was important to about 76% of people, and making money was important to about 40% of people. Fast forward to about 2010, 2015, the same study shows that money is now important to about 76 to 80% of people, and having meaning in life is important to about 40% of people. Now, that's actually very good information. It's a wonderful survey, but what it shows is that values in our society are changing. We're valuing having meaning in life a lot less, and we're valuing having money in life a lot more. And there used to be songs that say money can't buy you love, right? But we're not listening to songs like that anymore. We're listening to songs that basically talk about fame, money, and what we can get out of all of that. And there's nothing wrong with prosperity. It's absolutely fantastic. It does have a few bad side effects that we're going to have to start dealing with, but it does mean that meaning can be left behind. And so when you get this emptiness, often it's due to a sense of meaninglessness. And quite frankly, Hurricane, there was a report that came out in the UK last year that over three quarters of people believe that the job that they have is meaningless. And that's so sad. That's so sad. That means that people are spending more than 8 hours a day on something that they don't believe in, or they believe has no meaning. And why are they doing that? Because they need the money. They need the money to keep going. And the money does not provide the meaning. And it would be very nice if we could start to turn this around so that we could get back to doing more and more jobs that actually create meaning for this person, so that we don't feel that emptiness inside.
Well, thank you, Deck. You know, it's funny, you know, we hear money talks, bullshit walks. I mean, some expressions of that nature, you know, and that's kind of like really, you know, a lot of us are being almost conditioned to hearing these things and making them part of our, I guess, vocabulary and talk, right? But, and even like you said, I mean, you and I, we're in social media, but we have a different feeling about how social media should be, and you know, the different pros and cons of it, and how it operates. But you're right, we live in there's a lot of push on glam and, you know, money, and some people are like, oh, if you can't be with someone that doesn't have money, and the gold digging and all this stuff is becoming, you know, the norm. Yet, you know, you can have billions and millions and trillions and still doesn't do anything. It's not going to buy you happiness. It buys you tools and maybe a crowd, an entourage, but it's not going to. Some people can say, well, you know, Hurricane, Dr. Hama, what are you guys talking about? I mean, maybe me, they could tell me. They can't tell you that. You know what I'm talking about.
So let's talk about the relationship between money and happiness, okay? Because money can't buy you love, but it doesn't buy you poverty either, right? So these studies are about 15 years old, where they looked at, well, just how much does money contribute to meaning and happiness? And what they found was around the world that if you were making enough money so that in your household you had enough food on the table, you had a decent house, and you had enough left over just for one basic holiday a year, so going camping somewhere, going on somewhere really, really basic, after that, money doesn't actually add to your happiness. Beyond that, you have to start finding meaning and significance. And for people who then get to meaning and significance, what they find that they need is actually helping other people out. This is why so many successful business people and so many successful celebrities start putting together foundations, start finding a charity that they actually admire and want to put their effort into, because that's where they get their meaning, helping other people. So all of us on some level can come back to that idea of empathy, where if we're there for somebody else, if you're there for one other person, if you are fulfilling the needs of one other person, even if it's just an old person down the road that needs their lawn mowed or their garden trimmed once a week, you will find that one of the most meaningful things in your life. And sure, get the money, but do something like that once a week to keep that idea of my life is meaningful. I'm useful to somebody else. And that will stop that sense of emptiness that the person who asked that question feels.
Well, thank you, Doug. So, you know, I mean, emptiness really is like a lack of fulfillment. I mean, you're not fulfilled by anything, really. You just don't know. I mean, you just blank. And you're right. I mean, maybe we're chasing, you know, the wrong things, and they're just not. I mean, some people go to alcohol, addiction and stuff just to find a little bit of excitement, but there's no, and we've talked about, you know, some of these things in previous, you know, seasons that, you know, that doesn't do anything for you. It's just going to hurt you mentally and physically, and that's all. And then eventually you have to deal with the aftermath. If you don't mind, Doc, I'm just going to throw in a concept, because you mentioned something about the money and like your resources in the study. Believe it or not, this is an Islamic thing that, you know, that it's a principle that I actually apply. And it's really simple. It's three things. If you are safe, healthy, and, you know, you have enough food for your day, you're actually royal. I mean, you don't need anything else. I mean, because you take a day at a time, nobody guarantees the next day, right? And so if you use that concept, day, and even actually there is a thing that says, as long as you have, you know, enough for the backup, you know, for a year, that's the only wealth you need, you know. So there are some principles that actually, you know, they apply. If you apply them, you know, you will have less stress in life. I mean, think about it this way. All right, I get up, I got some stuff during the day, I'm good, nobody's chasing me, I'm happy. So cool. I mean, I could live happy. No, you know, so you have some sort of, and then you focus on better things. I'm sorry, go ahead, Doc.
Oh, no, that's exactly right, because you use an example that comes from your background, Hurricane. And I just want to let you know that example has actually been validated in science, because in the psychological sciences and the behavioral sciences, we have what's called Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this comes from a theory that he put together in 1943 that basically says there's a hierarchy of what we're reaching for in life. Right down the bottom, what we need is we need food, shelter, and then next we need a society that's safe, and we need some sort of security through having jobs. Then the next level is having people that we care about, a sense of belonging, not only in a family, but also in a community. And only after all of those are in place, then you go to what's called the self-esteem needs, things that make you feel special just on your own, before you get to that special stuff where you're really flying as a businessman or whatever. But here's the thing. If you lost the things down the bottom, so your health or your food or your security, you're going to be unhappy. If you lose the people that you love while going for the big bucks or the big fame, you're going to be unhappy. So what we have is now a scientifically validated hierarchy that actually says, yeah, the thing that you just talked about there, that's actually true. You're happy if you have health, food, and people around you.
Doctor, I have not heard about that study, but it's amazing how it is. It is really a factual thing, but it does work. I mean, I've used it myself in life, and, you know, because, you know, we talked about depression, right? And depression is like you're always, you know, thinking about everything that went wrong, right? I mean, you're like, oh my God, oh, I should have done this. I could have done this. Things could have been better. And then you're like, you're anxious about everything that could possibly go, you know, in the future. You have no control over things. I mean, again, we've gone through the pandemic, right? Who the hell expected that to happen, right?
And yeah.
And oops, everything changed. Our lives changed. I mean, literally drastically for you guys in Australia. I mean, what is it? Was it a year for you guys? Like when it was just tough days? I mean, you guys were an extreme example, you know, out there. But even in the States, we had, you know, depends on the state you're in, things were not really, you know, as simple. I mean, maybe if you were in Florida, things were easy.
Yeah. And just relevant to what we were talking about here, Hurricane, one of the really good things that we learned across the world about through the pandemic is, you know what? We had time for the people that were close to us. Couples actually spent time with each other. Families spent time with each other. And Hurricane, the papers say that there was more violence and divorce during the pandemic because people were close. That's actually not true. The evidence shows that people actually worked on their relationship and they got to love and appreciate each other more, which is why we're now in a situation where people want to work from home, because you know what? Home life is actually important. Spending time with a person who's in my life as that soulmate is important. And since the pandemic, the initial studies show that there are actually more relationships happening. There are more people getting married. Now, this is only new evidence, but we seem to have collectively learnt that relationships are important. And there's this move out there, Hurricane, where we're starting to appreciate each other a whole lot more. So there's this place called the Offline Club. And through the internet, they will say there is this park in Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam, you can turn up. You're not allowed to bring mobile phones around, but you will meet hundreds of other people that are there just ready to talk. Or these will happen all over Europe, and they're starting to happen in Australia and the USA as well, where people are just talking as human beings. And we're reconnecting, Hurricane. We're reconnecting in empathy. And so we're getting back to not only family values, but friendship values and community values. And we're sort of starting to see, hey, maybe we've disconnected from each other too much. Let's get back to it. Let's get back to being human beings.
Doctor, I'll listen to you. Well, first of all, thank you for really giving those new studies and you know, about how the pandemic did benefit. And frankly, you're right. I mean, we've seen a lot of positive stuff coming out of the pandemic. I mean, whether there are people that really flourished beyond the pandemic, they reset themselves, they found their true inspiration and aspiration in life and, you know, mission, you know, all the stuff. And some people went in business and they became millionaires and billionaires since then, right? So there's a lot of stuff that happened positive, but you're right. People got together. It's like having a, like this is like years back, we had a hurricane. Sorry about that, guys. No, it wasn't me. It was Sandy. It was not H. But so Sandy came through, and you know, we had blackouts, right? You know, and we were finally getting together. There was no nothing, no internet, no light, no electricity. We had, you know, candles and camping lights, and you know, we had board games, and we got together. We had fun, right? And so you're right. Things happen. You're right, when you can create that. By the way, the reason I was laughing, it's funny. I mean, I'm just gonna quote another ad on TV, but so you talked about Amsterdam, and so there's a Heineken, you know, ad on TV right now, and the whole ad is about like this guy is looking on social and he can't find anyone, and then he goes into this bar and everybody's having a Heineken and socializing, and nobody's on the internet. So I guess maybe it's driven by the same idea what's happening in Amsterdam there. So maybe it's a movement and they capitalize only on that ad. But you know, these are things, you know, sometimes they're implied and you know it's out there, but you know, I mean, I pay attention to all these things, and like, you know, obviously it is a big deal because like, where are the people? They're not on the media. They're somewhere having a good time and, you know, talking one-on-one. But those are the things. So you know, we have to have a circle of friends. We have to have, obviously you can't, we all have friends. We have a lot of acquaintances. I mean, in my world, I mean, I have so many and literally, but only I can count them on my hands, the people that I can trust, that I can confide in, you know, and that know everything about me, because you know, I don't know anything about you, doctor. I know what I know, what you want me to know, right? What the public needs to know. But that's the same thing, right? Everybody's got their own, you know, inclusive, you know, you know, and secluded, you know, group of folks that make you feel, you know, good. And there are things that we add to it. I mean, for example, I love fitness, right? So that makes me, you know, a good thing, right? I it fulfills me, right? I like my environment, you know, my belief and all the stuff that's work for me, right? And everybody can create that. Now, again, to the question of being empty, you know, that is, you know, I mean, it's a tough place to be. It's, you know, like, but I can get it. I mean, we all go through some phases. Sometimes, you know, you're stressed a little bit, things are not going your way financially, whatever. And you feel that. I mean, I've had that actually, where it's like you just blank, there's nothing, like you can't figure it out. Like you're in a dead zone. And by the way, is that a common thing though for all of us? I mean, because I think, I don't know if someone watching or listening has experienced the same thing, but I have, you know, where you just felt like something's off.
Yep. So the idea of emptiness can come from different places. And particularly in context of the person who asked this, is it depression? There are two main places that I'm that emptiness comes from that I want to emphasize here today. Emptiness can come from that sense of meaninglessness. What does my life actually mean? And so that's why I concentrated on that, because in our present day technology-driven society, we can get to this place of meaninglessness. But the second place that emptiness can come from is kind of this hole that a lot of us can feel in our chest, because our love tanks aren't full. I want to fill that love tank. I want to have a hug. I want to have people around me that care, and I want to share with people. And so there, your love tank can get filled, and that emptiness can be filled, not through money or even significance, but by us having people around us. And look, we live in an amazing age, Hurricane. It's been absolutely amazing. It's been a wild ride for about 30 years now since the advent of computers and social media, but it's come at a cost. It's got some serious side effects. And one of the serious side effects is we're becoming lonelier. So those things like the offline club, the Heineken ad where there are other people who actually want to talk to you, or even just a coffee culture that we have brought up for ourselves, that people will get together. It's not just about the coffee. It's getting together in a time and space where you can talk to somebody. These are the things that are reclaiming that space that we learned from the pandemic, that people are important. And the people that are closer are important are more important. Okay, I didn't quite say that right. But the people who are close are more important, and we have to work to make sure that we value and get back to that sense of closeness as social creatures that we humans are.
Well, thank you, Doug. So just quickly, I know we're about to close the show, but just on this end. So I think we do have a problem, and this is going to lean into the idea of social media again. Is it possible that we are depressed because of the stuff we see every day? I mean, because I'm not talking about the bad stuff, meaning that, you know, deaths and wars and stuff. I mean, that's another story. But I'm talking about just the fact that you see people trying to flex their muscle, their wealth, and, you know, living the life and pushing, you know, influencers left and right, are doing all that. I mean, you know, because it's a whole marketing campaign that's out there, campaigns, I would say. I mean, you know, listen, we're in this world, my wife and I, so we understand it a little bit different from most, right? And you get these offers all the time, you know, hey, push this product, do this, the other. And when you look at these things, and sometimes it's not really what it is. I mean, people think that it's all real, and yeah, what they see is what the reality is. It's not. You actually, you know, a lot of this stuff is really a hype. It is for the purpose of pushing, marketing, and selling. And there's somebody behind that pushes. I mean, if you give me a super brand that I'm going to push, right, you know, and you're going to pay me for it, I'm going to present it correctly, right? I'm going to push that. It's just more, yeah, sales, right?
Yeah. So this is going to open a whole new topic for some other day, Hurricane. But sure, I just encourage people to see what actually it is that draws us onto the internet, draws us into social media, and how we're actually being brainwashed, if you liked, or manipulated, which kind of harks back to what we started talking about. But one of the key things that psychologists that want to keep us on the internet and market things to us make us feel, or want to try to make us feel, is the idea that we're not good enough. Because if you're not good enough, if you don't look good enough, if you don't smell good enough, if you don't do something good enough, if the clothes that you're wearing are not good enough, you're going to part with your money. Right. And if you look at that feeling of not good enough, and the way that they do that is by showing you a whole lot of idealistic people who are really good looking, that wear the right aftershave and drive the right car and are having the right experiences. It is all there to bring a sense of inadequacy to yourself. Because if you felt good about yourself, there's no reason to part with your money. But here's the thing, Hurricane, it's that feeling of not being good enough that leads to emptiness, that can lead to depression. And it's one of the reasons, only one, but it's one of the reasons that these mental health rates, particularly in depression and anxiety, are going up and up and up, even though we psychiatrists are using more and more antidepressants. There's something wrong. it's something wrong in the way that we're living. And what we're talking about here is just one of those things.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. Like, I, you know, it's amazing how you can use the same, like, listen, you're a psychiatrist, you're using it for good. You're helping people get, you know, validated, you know, do stuff. And here another bunch, they do the same work, but they're doing it for a different purpose. It's almost the opposite. It is like having that same tool that you can hurt people with it or do something good with it, right? I mean, you can.
I like to think of it in terms of side effects, because capitalism is one of the best things we've invented. It's not perfect. It's got a lot of side effects, and we're now living the side effects. And if we can find a way through the side effects, because it's actually through capitalism that we can actually produce enough money and goods for us to keep 8 million people on the planet going. And one of the most amazing things is that through capitalism, the whole world, we have had billions of people drawn out of poverty from the years 1990 to 2015. It's over a billion people that have been taken out of poverty. We don't want that to stop. That's good. But we've got to find the side effects. We've got to find a way to keep the meaning there. We have to find a way to make sure that we're not getting all anxious and depressed in this wonderful society that we're building up. We've got to keep it wonderful.
Well, thank you. And I think, doctor, you're right. I mean, listen, I'm not against it. Listen, I like to have a good life like everybody else. But I think it's, again, everything in balance, like understanding what that means. And is it for you?
Yeah.
Not every product is for me. You know, I don't care what you can put in place for me. Yeah. I mean, if you give it to me for free, maybe I'll take it. But in general, there's things, even if there are things, like, I don't like watches, simply, literally, I don't. I don't like to put anything in my hands. Now, someone, I have bought good watches, but I don't wear them. I don't care. I don't even have a wedding ring. You know, like, I just can't have anything on my body, right? And people are like, oh, like, sometimes, like, you're not married? No, I am married. Well, where's the ring? Like, I don't need to have a ring to justify that I'm married. You know, it's just a symbol, but it doesn't mean anything to me, right? So everybody's different in how they do it. I think, doctor, as long as we understand that, and we don't let things happen to us, and we are completely content with, you know, our lifestyle and what we have. Yeah, I mean, listen, extra money doesn't hurt. I mean, it will. It's not going to give you happiness or fulfillment, but it gives you the tool to live the life you want. Maybe it gives you the time to do the things that you enjoy in life. So there's different ways to do it. But you're right. It's just a matter of understanding. Your work, doctor, helping that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it comes back to what you just said, this idea of balance, right? There's nothing wrong with going out and making money. Just don't lose the people that you love in the process. All right. There's nothing wrong with going out there on social media and trying to get a whole lot of likes. Just don't make that your meaning in life, because you're going to get disappointed. Make sure you cultivate your friendships as well, which means time, which means we've got to be disciplined with ourselves to say, I'm going to spend some time on social media, but it's only going to be half an hour or an hour a day. If you're spending 4 or 5 hours on social media a day, that's time that could be used making sure that your relationships with your friends and family and the people that you love is better. It's an opportunity cost, and that's a business principle, as you know.
Well, also, I want just to add this, and we're going to close, is that the only commodity we can never get more of is time. So if you're wasting it, it's gone. It's not coming back. I mean, money you can bring back again. You can regain money as long as you live and you're working, but time you're not going to regain. So ask me. I mean, I'm sure, doctor, you know this concept, as we talked about it before. As you age, it's you do realize that, you know, time is ticking, and, you know, you haven't done a lot, and you still have a long way to go. So you got to do this stuff. Don't waste the time unnecessarily. I mean, it has to be fulfilling, something good. I mean, we spent a lot of hours doing this, but it's for the good. There's a legacy. We want to help people. So it's a fulfilling mission. So it's okay for me to do it. You know, I feel good about it.
Oh, yeah, Hurricane, that's so good. To go right to our limited resource. Our limited resource is time. Where do you spend your time? Do you have balance in where you spend time? Are you putting time into people and your own health as well as your entertainment? So I think that's a great place to look for balance and to find a way of dishing out this resource so that we keep meaning and love flowing in our life, as well as our entertainment and the money that we might want to make.
All right. So with that, doctor, thank you so much. I mean, we just barely 5 minutes ahead, you know, of our, well, over a little our time, you know, allocated time. But listen, it's all good. And we only went through two questions today. So, but again, I mean, it's you know, the question is just a start, and then there's a huge things that we dissect from it and we touch on. So hey, I just hope that we've delivered quite a bit to assist, you know, our folks watching or listening today or anytime, because this is evergreen. And again, folks, this is your hour, Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Han, every month, the last Friday of the month. So look forward to the next one. I believe that will be end of June. We'll be, I'm not sure where Dr. will be, but he'll be here. Hopefully nothing will stop that, you know, from happening. And we do have an alternate day if it, the Friday, whatever happens, you know, and we can make it, it's that next Monday. So one way or the other, we'll be, you know, with you guys on the next month. As long as we're on this planet, we will continue doing this, hopefully, and making it happen. Do send us your questions, please. You know, we need them. And then hopefully we can, your questions can not only help you, they can help other folks that are watching and listening. So, Dr. Haim, any last words of wisdom before we close today?
Hurricane, we've covered a lot. We've talked about empathy, and it's all making sure that we have that human contact. And I like where you took us at the end. You took us to time. So to have those connections with other people, we've actually got to spend time cultivating that time with other people, time to look each other in the eye, time to make sure that we're just talking and sharing ideas. And that's actually where I want to leave it, because I think that's actually good wisdom. Thanks, Hurricane.
Well, thank you, Doc. As always, a true honor to have you here. And so, folks, this is it. This is the end of this episode. This is Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim, live Q&As monthly. And we'll be talking on the next one, end of June. Bye for now.